Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Phil Vitale, you want to join in on that? Any albums that, what's the number one of all time Phil Vitale album?
Wow, that would be, that'd be a tricky one. It would probably be a Beatles album, me being me, and I would probably go back to either Sgt. Pepper's or Revolver, which are two of my favorite, like, no bad tracks on them albums, but I didn't hear the whole list, so I don't know where.
Well, I've got the 500 here. Here we go. Ready? 500.
Yeah, sure. Okay.
$4.99. I'll just, you got a minute? Because it's going to take a while.
Yeah, it's fine.
You know, when I do this, though, whenever you say, well, what were the albums that mattered to you that you really listened to and enjoyed a lot? Steely Dan, Asia worked for me. Super Tramp, Breakfast of Champions, love that one. I'm just thinking, what was I listening to in college? But those were some of the albums.
Yeah, if I go to college now, I've got to get some Eagles albums and Grateful Dead in there, and and then if I were a younger person, I'd be like, "Where's the Clash? You know, where's London Calling?" Here,
I think that is in the top 30. We kind of walked through the list. Nirvana's
that sounds
there,
good.
Stuff like that too.
Certainly, I mean, there's listenability, there's things like influence. I mean, and that's where the Clash would come in highly, I think.
I think that's part of it, right? It has to be that. It can't just be what was the best album musically,
right.
But I think it has to be, I used the word a minute ago, resonant.
That's right.
I think it needs to matter still a little bit,
sure.
Too.
Otherwise, it's best three chord progression of all time, and then it gets silly at that point.
But Tapestry is in the top, like, 52, and I was glad to see that, because...
Yeah, that was
up the grooves on that one.
Yeah, that was a big part of my life soundtrack, so yes, I would put that way up there.
Phil Vitale's the restaurant critic at the Chicago Tribune. Well, thanks, Phil. Been a pleasure.
Sure.
So Phil wrote the other day, you may have seen his pretty comprehensive story about the relationship between restaurants and the people that hold the leases. What's the story here, Phil? What are you writing about?
Well, I'm writing about sort of a combination of best practices for those landlords who have come up and who with their restaurant tenants come up with creative ways to keep those restaurants afloat. And when I say creative ways, I mean landlords are willing to accept less money to keep from having to foreclose or evict or any of that stuff. But it's a very delicate dance because landlords, by and large, have mortgages. And the banks have not been shining beacons of understanding throughout all this. You know, they want their money, and everybody wants their money, and there's not enough money. So, you know, there are different ways in which landlords have helped, and there are some circumstances in which landlords might be more inclined to take a hard line.
So then what do you do, right? Then you got no money coming in. How's that working?
Well, that's exactly it. Well, in one example, they said, let's say you have a building, and it's a one-story building, or it's a two-story building, and you've got a tenant in there, a restaurant that isn't able to pay. But you're looking at that property and where it's located and say, you know, that would be just a great little footprint for a boutique hotel, and I bet someone will pay me huge dollars for this parcel, and then they'll build something big there. And if I have a restaurant tenant, they can't start building until the lease is up, sale or no sale. So maybe this is my opportunity to throw this restaurant out and turn that building into something more profitable.
Works both ways, too, though. Lowry's is closing up shop downtown because the lease is expiring and they don't want to pay the rent anymore.
They don't want to commit to another 5 to 10 years. Sure.
Don't blame them for that. I don't think they want to commit to another 5 to 10 weeks. So at the end of the year, they're not going to be a restaurant, period, end. And I was thinking of all of the people that hold the paper on those buildings. By the way, where Lowry's is, you could put up a boutique hotel or another giant Starbucks or something. I mean,
maybe. I think the preservation people would have a screaming fit if you tried to mess with that historic mansion.
Okay, put it this way. You could do something in that building to make money at that location.
Sure.
In a few years. I'm not sure that anybody's going to make money on some of these buildings for a while.
Right. Hard to imagine anybody having dollar signs in their eyes at this moment.
Yeah, right. I suppose if you were, liquid enough, you could just sit on some of those properties, get them for a song, maybe sign a lease at a discount, and then when the economy comes around, you've got pretty good rent. But you've got to be pretty flush for that to happen.
Right. What we're seeing a lot of is landlords agreeing to leases for tenants in which the lease terms are now a percentage of the gross sales. Traditionally, that has not been something landlords have cared for.
A rev share, but, in other words.
Right. You know, if the restaurant makes out like gangbusters, they're going to collect a nice, tidy rent. And in the lean months or right now, they'll accept less rent to keep their tenant going and keep at least some money coming in. And others have gone the route of postponing rent, saying, okay, you've got 3 free months now, and what we're going to do is add 3 months to the end date of our lease. So I'll still get my money, but I'm going to get no money for 3 to 6 months, but then we've extended the lease as a result.
Sort of like they did with household mortgages or student loans, for that matter.
Right, and that can work if it's a lease with terms that both parties are happy with.
Phil, you're not walking into restaurants these days. Have you had anything delivered or picked up that you especially liked lately?
I had something delivered that was fine, but I'm not going to make mention of the restaurant name to spare him the following embarrassment. I had a lovely, I had a fun conversation on the phone, just trying to get some shrimp shumai, just some simple shrimp dumplings as part of an overall order. And I said, and the shrimp shumai. And the person on the phone said, okay, the Szechuan shrimp? No, I want the shrimp dumplings, the shrimp shumai. It's on your menu right here. I've got it in front of me, shrimp shumai. I'll have that. And she's, oh, okay. And when the order arrived, whether I went and picked it up and unpacked, what I had was 2 lonely shrimp on top of rice, like little nigiri rolls, with no topping or dressing whatsoever. Just these 2 sad, dried-out pieces of shrimp on little lumps of rice. And it was neither Szechuan shrimp nor shrimp shumai. There was shrimp in the name.
I was just going to say, you did
get their version of shrimp nigiri.
You did get shrimp.
Yep. I can't complain too much. But, again, just one of those, okay, I guess I'll have these. There's only 2 of them, but I ordered other stuff, so it'll be fine. I find myself having a hard time complaining about orders, even when they're kind of not exactly right, which is code for screwed up. But I'm really going to give whoever is going to answer the phone a hard time on a miscommunication in the middle of all this. I mean,
well, does there come a point where you do? I mean, nobody deserves to be screamed at, but I think we're 6 months in now, right? Middle of March to the middle of November or October we're coming up on. Well, it's the middle of September, whatever, but you get the point. At some point you say, okay, if you're still in business, I expect you to be a competent business. There is a moment of truth when you open up your delivered food or your picked up food and hope that it is all there. Sometimes there's a lot of little packets that go with that. Here's the pickles. There's the onions. There's the thing. There's the sauce. Whatever it is, so it's more difficult for them. But at some point, I think we do need. It's fair to hold them to what you ordered. That's for sure.
Right. Shrimp shumai is not exactly.
Well, what do you do in ordering LSAT, shrimp anyway? For crying out loud, shrimp is kind of a scary food anyway, and now you're having to put it in a truck. That's more frightening to me than the COVID.
Really? I can eat shrimp by the handful. Shrimp doesn't scare me.
Yeah.
I am not. I ain't afraid of no shrimp.
But you are still apprehensive about going into dine-in restaurants, right?
A little bit. Last week's CDC announcement saying that, they're pretty sure that, like a higher percentage of tests of people who tested positive that we checked with had been in a restaurant.
I think it was half.
Yeah. Then again, we do go to restaurants, so I'm not sure. I mean, I wonder what percentage of those people drank milk. I'm not keen to say, yeah, that's what's causing it. I wonder how many percentage of those people have visited grocery stores.
Right, 50% of the people that drive cars or have been to a Starbucks probably have it as well.
Or shaking hands with anybody in the last 2 weeks. So it's I found hard. that I wanted better research before I was willing to jump on board saying, oh, yeah, restaurants are doing this.
I find myself trying to figure out what to make of some of the statistics. Like, I can get my head around that, 50% of the people. So if I don't go to restaurants, then I probably won't get it. But maybe that's not true. I saw on CNN just a scroll today, and it said that somebody from the CDC or the FDA or the YMCA, it was from somewhere, and they said that 90% of the population has still not been exposed to the virus, meaning that most of us are still vulnerable to it. There ain't no herd immunity coming, and we all still need to be diligent.
So I'm not exactly
that's an interesting data point. I guess that's all you're supposed to take away from that, but I'm not exactly sure what that means. I'll tell you what, I'm planning this weekend on dining at a restaurant on the patio when I can eat outside. I have complete confidence. I thoroughly enjoy myself, even as I, you know, slide the mask up and down over my chin when the wait staff comes and goes, you know.
And this weekend is shaping up to be a really nice one for outside dining.
Yeah.
As those dwindle to a precious few, this weekend should be really good for that sort of thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then we'll see how many people can adapt to expanded outdoor dining per the city's new rules.
Yeah, what do you think is going to happen about that, Phil? I don't know how restaurants, for instance, Bandera. You know, I like Bandera on Michigan Avenue. They have not reopened since March because they got no outdoor dining, and it's a closed room. So they haven't made a nickel, and I guess they won't this winter either. I don't know what's going to happen to that place.
No,
if all of the restaurants end up becoming Bandera, well, I don't know how any of them are going to make any money.
Right. And going back to that earlier story of mine, we talked about, that's starting to inform how people are looking at new leases. Anybody thinking of opening a restaurant? And there are still people who are going to try to open new restaurants because that's in most cases that's what they do, and they're going to go at it. But you know, lease negotiations in the near future are going to be completely different. They're going to be talking about having escape clauses or, you know, force majeure clauses that will protect them in the case of unforeseen. This time they'll mention, you know, pandemics specifically. A lot more people will be insisting on some form of percentage of gross sales condition, either as part of the entire lease or as something that would kick in the event of a resurgence of the pandemic.
Which could be profitable for the person lending the money, too, right? I mean, if you had a going concern, you might come out better than the lease.
You could. You negotiate, say, okay, I will offer you this protection against something horrible. In exchange, there should be a really good payday for me if everything goes great.
Six words to describe 2020. When does the asteroid hit? I believe that's the one. You mentioned force majeure, and you say, okay, I've got it covered now. We're going to make sure we write in pandemic, and then we get hit by an asteroid.
And my asteroid. Yeah, fortunately, asteroids tend to be real exclamation points. You're either hit by the asteroid, or you're wiped out by the force, or you're kind of like, oh, that was terrible, whatever happened all the way over there.
Wait a minute. Elif says she wants to say something positive. Let's go to Elif, already in progress.
Thank goodness.
Okay. So I actually went to a restaurant for the first time since June 7th, my birthday this year, and sat outside. And you had to wait. First, you had to make a reservation, and then you also had to wait 20 minutes if you wanted to sit outside. And I asked to wait for the 20 minutes to sit outside, and it felt really safe. This was Hampton Social, right around the corner from here, and the tables were all spaced apart really well. The servers were really professional, and they didn't touch you or anything, and didn't spend a lot of time.
How was the masking thing where they don't approach your table until you're...
I felt bad because how am I supposed to be ready for you to walk up to my table and then put my mask on?
That gets violated all the time.
For the 2 seconds that you're coming to my table,
But otherwise, good food, good service, good experience.
Yeah, and then a bee landed on my burger, but bees only, I found out that bees only come to clean food, so clean things.
I'm okay with that. Assuming the bee hasn't got some sort of, you know, thing going on.
I'm not worried about that.
Atta girl, Elif. All right, Phil.
Can I throw in something that's kind of funny? Another restaurant reported on dining outside, and a table was outside, and they had a bee land on, you know, do a touch and go on their food.
Yeah.
And it was like, well, it probably would have been a yellow jacket. Bees aren't interested in our food, but the couple demanded all new food because it had been
really
contaminated by
really?
Bee.
Okay,
completely
fine.
Unexpected is sitting in a flower-lined outdoor dining space on a warm day.
I guess you don't want to eat your food. In some cultures, bees are a delicacy. Come on, people.
Exactly. You should have thrown that bun right on top of them real quick. And
I'm out of time. All right, Phil. Read Phil Vitale in the ChicagoTribune.com/dining.
Please.
They have paper editions, too. Nice to talk to you, my friend.